Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. As students settle into school, the Kawartha Pine Ridge District School Board is facing a number of challenges. On today's show, the school board's chair, Steve Russell, will address key issues. At the forefront is labor unrest. While negotiations continue, there is great uncertainty. That is especially true for elementary teachers. Russell will explain what the board is doing to prepare. Then there's a lot of talk about gender identity. The Premier and the Minister of Education have both said they wish to ensure parents are involved when students wish to transition. You'll hear Russell's response. Finally, there's a lot of new curriculum this year. He will also address what is changing. I'm so pleased to have with me today Steve Russell, the chair of the Kawartha Pine Ridge District School Board. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you very much.
Early in August, Education Minister Stephen Leechy reiterated his government's commitment to push school boards to be more accountable with new requirements for school boards to report their progress to achieve provincial priorities. Can you explain to parents what that means to the KPR school board?
I think the minister is trying to make sure that boards are accountable for an improvement in student achievement. And so there are a number of initiatives that relate to that. There are some additional supports for literacy. There's change in the curriculum, the language arts curriculum, which hasn't been changed since about 2007, I think. And there's some new supports for math. So the minister is very interested in seeing that our EQAO scores are increasing. And of course, boards have been working on that for a long time.
But if there's this new curriculum, what is the board doing to integrate that new curriculum, and how is it changing what kids are learning in the classroom?
Well, the August announcement was actually a re-announcement of some of these initiatives. So we've known about it. We've been working on it since the spring. So we have some internal staff within the board office, some lead teachers and our superintendents and principals of program who have been putting together work with education consultants within the board. So these are some teachers who've been withdrawn from the classroom to focus on those particular things and to help support other teachers with training. So there's a new language arts curriculum 1 to 8. The minister, I think, likes to say it's back to basics. I'm not sure that I agree with that entirely, but it's based on some new educational science. It comes from the Right to Read report by the Ontario Human Rights Commission that basically said for some students, there are students who are struggling to read, and without the basic literacy skills to move forward, those students are destined to continue to struggle throughout their educational career. So there's an emphasis on some scientifically and research-based approaches to literacy skills attainment and some screening tools for students from K to grade 2, so that we can identify very clearly who the students are that have additional reading and writing challenges, and we can focus to intervene on behalf of those students to make sure that they catch up and they can progress.
How far along are you in implementing this within the classroom?
Well, this is the beginning this September, but we've had staff working on it throughout the spring, and I'm really proud of our teachers. We had 200 educators who volunteered to come in over the summer and work on professional development, you know, sort of out of their holiday time and without pay, to come and get a jump on it. And those teachers are going to be very helpful when they get back with their colleagues to look at this and begin to implement it. There aren't radical changes, I would say, to that curriculum. There are some changes. And those screening tools we've yet to see and work with. We're hoping that we get all of that soon. But we've got all those teachers. And on the August 31st PD day, before the Labor Day weekend, all of the teachers got together to within their schools to look at that language arts curriculum and to see what those changes will be as they begin to move forward with them this fall.
You talked specifically about literacy, but there was also a new curriculum for math and science as well. Right. Can you tell us what's been done in those two areas and where you are in terms of implementing those as well?
Well, very similarly, we've been working on some of those math outcomes for quite a while. Across the province, the minister is giving us 300 additional math teachers, lead teachers, and every board is required to have one. In KPR, we've had math supports for a number of years, and we've been doing quite well with what's called a scope and sequence process. Lots of in-service where teachers get together and collaborate on their math teaching strategies, and they try to make sure that they're using a scaffolded approach. So students have really got the skills under their belt in one area before they move on to the next area. And we've been engaged in that for a number of years. But now the minister is going to mandate that we have a math lead teacher. And that person will be responsible for making sure that this kind of progress in math continues. In the science area, there's some changes, and there's a grade 10 digital technology course now that's aimed at helping students to learn more about the world of coding and using computers, and getting some kind of hands-on projects to investigate artificial intelligence and to learn about cybersecurity. There's lots of focus there on the digital world. And there's also a bit of an emphasis on financial planning and helping students to learn those kind of life skills related to more simple mathematics, frankly, but the important life skills, you know, what is compound interest? I wish I had known when I was 20 years old.
Part of this must be being accountable to the provincial government to show that you're making progress on these things. What tools are being used for you at the board to monitor how these things are being integrated? How do you measure all this as it's going on and going forward?
Now, good question. We have for many years looked at EQAO scores and that data, both on literacy and mathematics. And we can disaggregate the data and take a careful look at what schools and what cohorts, and really try to understand the anomalies that we might see in that data. You know, and sometimes that analysis is really crucial, because you may see, for instance, a school score plummeting and realize, well, there was a bit of a flu epidemic at test time. So the loss of half a dozen kids from the group has pulled the school score way down. So all of that kind of analysis of data is very important. But we've also always had a process of developing a strategic plan for the board and setting priorities for KPR. And those are monitored throughout the year. The director of the board needs to report to the trustees periodically on those. And that process is being formalized, and the minister wants to have a close look at what those strategic priorities are and make sure that they are focused around student achievement. My personal feeling is that we need to focus them on both student achievement and wellness and student well-being. Those are the two parts of the mandate for trustees. And it's a bit disappointing to me that the minister speaks a great deal about student achievement, but a little bit less about mental health and wellness and that kind of student well-being.
One thing the government is emphasizing is that they want a safe and supportive learning environment. Mm-hmm. Are there any indicators at the moment to you and the trustees at any of the schools within the board that are not safe?
Well, I mean, safety for the students and staff both is a top priority for us. There unfortunately are incidents fairly often where, you know, students become combative. And as you can imagine, it's a very challenging thing if a student acts out violently within the school against an education assistant or against a teacher or against other students. And, you know, if you need to physically restrain a student who's having a terrible tantrum or losing it and becoming physically violent, that puts everybody in a very difficult position, because we certainly don't ever want to be assaulting a child, but we do need to be using effective restraints. And staff are trained in those areas, but that's a challenge. And we work on it all the time, and it's a concern. In terms of other, you know, aspects of safety, well, we've just gone through that terrible pandemic, and trying to keep students safe with masking and all of those protocols. We were fortunate that the ministry recognized the need and provided funding for sort of emergency supplies of hand sanitizers and all of the things that helped to keep kids safe from that. So, you know, safety is always a priority.
You alluded to the importance of students feeling that they're recognized for who they are. The education minister made some remarks recently regarding gender identity. He said, and I'm quoting him now, "Parents must be fully involved and fully aware of what's happening in the life of their children." First off, what is the current policy of the board in regards to gender identity?
Well, those students, I mean, we're talking about transitioning students here. And I think the concern is there's lots of media attention to the use of pronouns. And, you know, these are really delicate and difficult situations for teachers and parents to deal with. And fundamentally, the school and the parent are partners in this situation. And when a child or a young adult is going through that sort of transitional period, if they're a trans student, it's very, very difficult for them. It takes a lot of courage for them to deal with what they are going through as a person. So our role in the school is to be affirming their value as a person, their dignity and their privacy, and to make sure that we support them no matter what. In some rare cases, and, you know, we're talking about very small numbers of students, right? It's not like there's, you know, half of your class are going to be transitioning students. It's fairly rare, but still very, very important for those students and families involved. So we want to make sure that that student is safe. And if they reveal those, you know, what they're going through to a trusted adult in the school system first, usually it's part of a process that they're going through, and usually their parents know all about it and are well informed, and it's a, you know, we can collaborate and support them through the process. In some cases, the students say, "I'm not ready yet to deal with this at home. I'm trying it here." And that puts the school and the teachers who've been confided in into a really delicate position. We don't want to make that student feel that there's nobody they can trust, and we don't want to keep secrets from their family. So what we try to do is support those students, and each situation is unique. So essentially, we're trying to help the student to find the way to include the parents in the process. And that, you know, it is delicate, and we are trying to be respectful of everybody. you know, it's a challenge. Those are difficult situations. Our policy is to support the students. You know, for us, that's the front line. And we've got to make them safe. We've got to make all of the other students see that we are making each and every student safe.
I'd like to move on now for a moment. There is a great deal of tension between the province and school teachers. The government is continuing its negotiations with high school teachers until October 27th, when both sides have agreed to go to binding arbitration. And elementary teachers are still up in the air. The union has applied for conciliation, but the potential for a strike remains a possibility. What is the school board doing to prepare for any job action?
Well, you know, there have been job actions before, and we roll with that as best we can when they occur. Happy to say that we've got a QP agreement already with our board and Local 5555. And those folks are very important to what we do in education as well. We've got that one settled.
Just before a moment, before you go on, what is QP 555 and who do they represent, please? Just for us who don't know. Go ahead.
Right. Well, that would be custodians and secretarial staff and others. But in terms of the teachers, I think OSSTF has, you know, they've set a cap because really neither the teachers nor the government want students to be disrupted this year if we can possibly avoid it. And OPSPA, which is the Ontario Public School Boards Association, so that's an organization of boards, under kind of an umbrella organization for trustees of all the boards, we sit at that negotiating table as well. It's a three-table meeting room, and there's a lot of interaction there. And none of those three parties want to see school interrupted if it can be avoided. So I hope that everybody stays at the table and keeps talking as much as possible. I think the move by OSSTF makes sense to me. They will push and keep negotiating as far as they can, but they've decided in the end, we're going to go to arbitration and for this contract, live with what some impartial third party will say is the best balance. The challenge, I think, for the public to understand, and you know, I've learned a lot in my role as a trustee, the contracts aren't simple. It isn't just, you know, give me a 5% wage increase or a, you know, 1%, whatever, if the government wants to try to cap it. There are lots of other things in those contracts that have to do with not only the working conditions of the teachers, but also the learning conditions of the students, right? So class sizes, for example, or supports for program variety. And we work out some of those details locally, but it's not a simple, you know, give them 4% and tell them to shut up. It's much more complex. So I can understand why, you know, and I haven't been intimately involved in the EPFO negotiations, the elementary teachers group, but I think that they have lots of concerns and they just, you know, want to continue to negotiate in the way that they've done in the past. I know many elementary teachers and none of them want to go to job action or a strike. But, you know, they're fighting for a fair deal for themselves and for the students they serve.
I appreciate all the good sentiments that you've expressed, but bottom line is it's a very uncertain time. How does the board prepare itself when these things are uncertain, and what should parents know and be doing to respond appropriately as events unfold?
Well, I'm not, I guess I don't share that feeling that we're on thin ice. I think, you know, I've seen lots of these negotiations over time. Sometimes they push to, you know, a work to rule kind of job action where teachers withdraw some of voluntary work that they do on top of their paid work as a way to pressure the government to move on a contract negotiation. We've gone through that before, and we've gone all the way to teachers walking off the job. I don't feel like we're in any worse position now. I think now, because we've come out of this pandemic and there's been such disruption, there's a greater incentive for all parties to make sure that we get back to a stable situation. And I trust, I guess I'm a bit of an optimist, that people are going to be as reasonable as they can be in reaching those agreements. I haven't really answered your question. That's not fair. What do we do? It's hard to say what we specifically do because we don't know what the job actions or tactics might be in those situations. So fortunately, the one upside, I guess, of a horrible pandemic is that we learned how to pivot into online learning pretty quickly. And I don't know that we'll go there, but we certainly have a greater capacity for doing some distance education than we've had in the past.
At the beginning of every school year, parents go in with a positive view and all sorts of aspirations. Students go to school with all sorts of aspirations. As you start a new academic year, what are your aspirations for this upcoming year?
Well, this year, we, as a group of trustees, we have gathered input from the public over the spring toward our new strategic plan. So that's going to be a focus for us in the fall, trying to, you know, bring all that data together and sift through it and set some priorities for our board locally. And I'm hoping that we'll come up with a really good strategic plan. I think we have a good one right now, and I'm hoping it's not going to change too radically from what we have. But I'd like to see us focus in a little bit more. For me, you know, I was a high school teacher, and I see the impact of cuts to education in terms of the loss of program variety. And, you know, we're now, the minister keeps talking about skilled trades and the need for, you know, helping to steer students in that direction. Well, we used to have more shops. We closed a lot of them over time. We used to have a lot more music and arts-based programming, but as we're moving more toward the idea of job training or moving people forward in careers, we lose some of the richness of that program variety. And I, in my own experience, have taught in very large high schools where you could offer specialty programs because you could find 25 students to get together who, you know, and form a class that was very focused, you know, writer's craft at grade 11 with a focus on children's literature and writing craft. You know, you can't get to those really high interest focused courses unless you can meet the class size average that is prescribed for you. So what happens over time is we begin to lose some of those, the richness and variety of programs.
Sounds like you've got lots of challenges coming up.
Well, there's going to be lots of conversations, that's for sure. You know, and there are some things a school board can do locally and some things you just have to do what the ministry tells you.
Steve Russell, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.